This is Barbara Glickstein with Health Cetera. There is a growing body of evidence supporting voting and health, how when communities vote, they lessen risks for ill health and impact the wide range of health-based policies such as clean air, clean water, women's and children's health, as well as prescription drug prices, health access and equity, and many other health policy issues. Voting is also referred to as a social determinant of health. And what healthcare professionals are doing in the last couple of years and election cycles, and perhaps even earlier, are they're partnering with people, those who are seen as patients and their families, to assure their civil engagement in voting. What they're doing is they're working to amplify patients, families, and communities' voices outside of hospital and clinic walls, and sometimes within those walls. As we know, voting, it turns out, plays a really positive role in our personal health and basically bolsters overall well-being of our communities. Dr. Lisa Campbell is a nurse. She's the founder and CEO of Population Health Consultants. She's a leadership and life coach for nurses as her primary service. She is known as an enterprising public health nursing executive with over 40 years' experience. And is a respected and is respected as a trusted coach and effective innovator. I invited Dr. Campbell to be my guest today because she's out in the street, going to meetings, and helping people know if their registration is still valid, and if they're not registered, helping them to vote. Thank you for joining me today, Dr. Campbell, and I'll refer to you as Lisa as you requested. Full disclosure, Lisa and I know each other and have been engaged in public health practice and advocacy for a number of years. So, welcome to Health Cetera, Lisa.
Oh gosh, Barbara, it's fantastic to be here with you this morning.
And we are going to talk about all the things that people can do. And first, through that information of what you're doing and why, will help those who are listening, and perhaps those who are listening who then can amplify this information like the pebble in a pond and get everybody registered, secure their registration if they've already registered, and get out the vote. So, Lisa, why are you motivated to do this as a public health nurse and public health leader in the state of Texas previously and also nationally?
Yeah, so Barbara, it's really important to me the determinants of health, our social determinants of health. And what's even more interesting is the political determinant of health. I've been reading a book by Dr. Daniel Dawes called The Political Determinants of Health. And actually, they were founded on actually the founding of the United States and in the Constitution. And do you mind indulging me a moment to read a quote? Because this
Not at
really
all. And
is
to
the
please,
impetus of why I do what I do.
and what it is exactly are the political
Yes.
determinants of health. Thank you. Go ahead, Lisa.
Yes. So there was a quote by U.S. Supreme Justice Thurgood Marshall in a bicentennial speech. And he said, "They were enslaved by law, emancipated by law, disenfranchised and segregated by law, and finally, they have begun to win equality by law. Along the way, new constitutional principles have emerged to meet the challenges of a changing society. The progress has been dramatic and it will continue." And what we need to realize, especially in the healthcare profession, is that these political determinants of health, as an example, sit on who funds programs, state versus federal. In Texas, Texas didn't take the Medicare drawdown. So millions of people go without health insurance and care. And really, it's to improve the welfare of all peoples that live in the states. The political polarization has shifted how healthcare policies are implemented, what healthcare policies are implemented, and the promotion of commerce over the economic equality has really been underpinned by policies. And so if we vote, our vote helps shape the policies that impact the lives of people that are our neighbors and live in our community. They impact the health and the access to clean water and nutritious food and quality education and the ability to earn a living wage. And that's what motivates me to help get out the vote and educate people around checking to make sure they're on the voters' rolls.
Let's start there about checking to make sure you're on the voter rolls. I just did it myself. And if I can share a personal note here, I grew up in a family. There were four children, and my parents, my father was a truck driver, and my mother worked in the factory until we were all in school and a bit older. And then she took a position with the US Social Security Administration. My parents were very active in voter registration. They were happened to be active in the Democratic Party, but we're not talking about which party one votes in. And every night at dinner, there was a discussion about either civics or what was happening in the news. And I will remember one dinner right before school was ending, where we were informed, because we were on limited budgets, that we would not be taking a driving vacation to where we thought we'd be going because the price of gas went up. And it was based on a global situation going on at that time, and that it impacted the price of oil, impacted the price of gas. And my parents talked us through what the policy was at that time that made that happen. And those were the conversations I heard as a child growing up. So policy wasn't out of my parents' reach, as not they were high school graduates. My father had a GED, got it 40. I have a college and post, college degree, and all of my life has been informed by recognizing that the election and who you voted for locally, statewide, or nationally mattered. So I wanted to share that. So how about you,
Thank
Lisa?
you.
Did you grow up in a home where voting was sort of very much part of the family DNA?
I have to be honest, I don't remember that being part of our DNA, but I can tell you what I did with when we had children, my husband and I. So as soon as they were old enough, actually, I think the first time that we took our children to vote with us, they were probably about 2 or 3 years old. And when we had two children, each of us would carry one child on our hip and we'd go in. We'd talk about voting before we went in, and they go in with us. That's when we had a little voting booth, and they go in with us to the voting booth. And then when our children got 18, I went down to get a voter's registration card for them. I put it in a gift box and I wrapped it. And it was a gift to them. And I said, this is your civic duty to vote. And we're going to sit here while you fill out your voter's registration card and mail this in. And I remember feeling incredibly emotional about sitting with each of our children. They had gone to vote with us every single time there was an election. And to sit there and watch them fill out their own voter's registration card was so powerful. And to hear them be engaged in policy and to be active voters, that's how we impact our future, is the conversations at our kitchen table. So it might not have happened with me, but we changed the scenario in our own family.
I love that story.
Thank you.
So, why should people check to be sure they're still registered, even if they may have voted in a primary this in 2024, Lisa? What's happening around those issues?
Sure. Well, first it's important to know what the law is in your state. Some states, voters automatically get sent a voters register, to voters information, or they're automatically registered to vote when they get a driver's license or renew their driver's license, like Oregon. However, like the state of Texas, every 2 years, you get a voter's registration card. Well, what has happened is naturally, people are suspended, or I'll say even purged from the rolls because of death. Okay, so, say death, or if there's a change of address. Now, It could be something as simple as there was a return piece of mail. Maybe you were selected for jury duty and that got returned for whatever reason. Okay, you could still be at that address, but for whatever reason, then something triggers the elections office and then you are removed from or suspended, not removed, suspended from the rolls. Okay. So in Texas, there's been around 2 million people suspended from the voting rolls for change of address or address issues, or maybe they died. Okay. So what we did, for example, yesterday I was with the League of Women Voters, a nonpartisan group that started after women's right to vote. We were at an educate like an educator's event, and we talked to a little over 30 people. And while we were there, we had people go on the Bexar County election site and look up to see if they were on the rolls. It's very easy to do. We five people who had a voter's registration card were not on the roll. They were not listed on the roll. So what we informed them to do, and what you can do if you have like a voter's registration card or not, is call the election office. If they can't reinstate you, like they can't fine you for whatever reason, now you have time to make sure you take action necessary, whatever the law is there in your state, to get yourself back on the roll. Because, as an example, in Texas, you have to be registered to vote by October 7th.
No, that's soon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. So you got to look up in your state. So it's our obligation, I believe, to educate people. I got to tell you this one great story, though. Okay. Because we talked to this one really nice lady from Houston. I said, "Would you like to check your status to make sure you're on the roll?" She goes, "Ma'am, I got to tell you what happened." She said, "Our pastor at church didn't tell us how to vote, but he told us all to get out our phones. And he told us what site to go to make sure we were registered to vote because of this very issue you're just talking about, what I shared about people being suspended. So we can get out the word to make sure people are on the rolls to vote." Now, that doesn't mean you can't vote because you can fill out a provisional ballot. However, that takes time. It's frustrating, and you want to make sure you're on the voter roll.
Oh, that's a good point. You made me think one actionable recommendation could be if you're involved in a book club, a community garden, a church, a mosque, a synagogue, that you might bring this up at as a community gift, as you call it, the gift of the registration card for your children at 18, that in fact, it's just quick to do, and everyone usually carries their mobile phone. It's appropriate to take it out wherever you are and have people quickly check. It's probably a devastating and frustrating experience to show up on election day and find out that you're not in the books. So there's the first actionable item that your recommendation can be followed through on. What have you been taking classes with the Women's League of Voters, or what have you been doing?
Barbara, I've always been intrigued by the League of Women Voters. What I love about them is they provide nonpartisan information. They have a vote, let's see, vote411.org, which is it's national, like nationwide. You can check and see who's running. And so they had a training. I went down to do the training. They probably said about 1,000 times, "Do not talk politics. Don't get into, this is nonpartisan." And that's their superpower. That's why they get invited to things like, "I'm going to volunteer on National Citizenship Day on September 17th for a naturalization ceremony where we actually, take the cards, they're stamped naturalized. So when they go to the appropriate county, the elections office know that they're just newly a new citizen so that they can process them appropriately. It doesn't hold anything up. Think about what that
Wow.
simple act of stamping somebody's voter registration card to ensure that they have the right to vote.
Yes.
So they get invited to all kinds of events because of their superpower, their nonpartisan.
I'm glad that you're pointing that out because this program today is also going to be focusing on nonpartisan actions. However you choose to vote and follow the issues, there are many, many issues that are important to people individually, whether they are national and or global foreign policy issues. It's important to know the candidates' positions, and we'll get to something in a little bit about that. And there are other health professional organizations. I know you're working individually. I think just individually, are you involved also in any of the Vote ER programs or?
Well, Barbara, I learned about that and I signed up to get one of those badges with the QR code. I'm still waiting, but in the meantime, I'm working with the League of Women Voters. I'm also doing a Vote Forward, which is a nonpartisan organization where you write letters. I actually have written 40 letters to people that live in Alaska. It tells them why I'm voting. It encourages them to vote. It gives them QR codes about information. They even say this is by volunteer. If you have any questions, call us. Like, it's all transparent. And I'm going to be mailing those out the 1st of October before I leave the country. So I'm doing everything I can. I'm taking action, small actions, even every day. Oh, I got 100 postcards I'm going to do for another organization
Oh,
that's
she's so excited about her
nonpartisan.
100
Yeah. I'm
postcards.
like, I got to do 100 postcards. Like, so I sit there and I have them all. I'm waiting for those to come. So, yeah.
Well, a little bit about what I know about Vote ER, the Vote ER program, and you probably can fill in, is that there are now over 350 healthcare organizations who are participating, with something like 50 to 75,000 healthcare professionals who are working to register people. And they're doing it in hospitals, in clinics. And this was a big hurdle to overcome for health professionals. I think it was Representative Lauren Underwood, who is from Illinois, who said nursing is political. What's your response to that, Lisa? And why is nursing political? And what do we mean by that, to be political?
Congresswoman Underwood is 100% correct. And I don't know about you, Barbara, but when I went to nursing school, they said don't talk about politics or religion. And I just think that we're doing each other a disservice. There's a way that you can have a conversation that is empowering to both people, and you can hear people's perspectives. Policy is all predicated on politics. I mean, that's the truth. We don't get anything done without elected leaders voting for things, right? Whether it's the local city council or at your state house or nationally. So politically, being political for me is educating people. Yes, it will be on a side always for the public's health. So for me, it is around I am talking to people about what issues, my values, but what issues are important to the public overall. And that does step into the political realm, whether you want to admit it or not. So as a nurse, that's part of my wheelhouse, is to be in that space.
I know that there are many ways that nursing and people in healthcare define health, which does include housing rights, environment, jobs, walkable cities, right? And as we're both public health nurses, we know that, and you've had leadership roles in public health in your state, that the connection that one may think doesn't involve health is also part of our education. To have housing and to be able to, as a nurse working in the emergency department, we know for years that when people came in or they were hospitalized for an urgent matter, we weren't asking, where are we discharging you to? And now that's part of our nursing practice and other professionals' nursing practice. So we need to have whether it's interim shelter or knowing that you can't discharge someone. And I think these, as we've become more able to apply our practice of nursing in this way, that we've been also able to support and advocate for housing issues, clean air, walkable sidewalks, lighting on streets for safety, making sure our elders have transportation, and things like that. So if you're listening and any one of these points are one that really matter to you, think about and look at the candidates that are on the election ballot in your area. In New York State, there's an important ballot that's around equality. Read those policies before you get in the booth. And when, if you're at a healthcare facility, look for Vote ER or even ask whether or not there is some way in your local area that you can support and help with people getting registered. Go ahead,
Oh,
Lisa.
you know, Barbara, thank you. I mean, there's so many granular issues around housing, of course, even children being exposed to environmental contaminants and asthma and being absent from school and lack of heating or air condition and how that goes. But the Vote ER, what I love is I heard a provider say that they talked about voting at the beginning or the ending of some conference or any kind of meeting they were in, because healthcare people in healthcare are 20% less likely to vote than the general public.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
So it's imperative, even for as a nurse, like if I was in the acute care setting or primary care setting, to talk to my colleagues about voting. Because even if you're I mean, you can do absentee voting if you're out of the country, or go vote early. Vote early, 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 is critical.
It's critical. You
Yeah.
know, I have never missed a primary election or a general election. And this past primary for our for New York City primary, I didn't vote early because I don't know why I didn't. I don't think I was around or something. And then on the voting day, I got home around 7:30 and my husband had his I voted sticker. And I said, "Oh my gosh, I didn't vote." And I turned around and got on a bike and went, and I was so glad I did. And I would have felt, first of all, my parents on my shoulder saying, "What do you mean you didn't vote?" even as a 70-year-old adult,
Yeah.
but also my sense of obligation of there were a
Yeah.
couple of measures that were important to me. And I was so glad that he had that sticker on. He probably would have told me I voted. Did you go vote? Because we check in on each other about
Yeah.
that. We have just a minute or two left, and Lisa, I wanted to let you have the takeaway about you've already shared your passion and reason as a public health nurse and as a
Yeah.
citizen. I also just briefly want to say that I want to take back the word patriot, that I am patriotic, and voting is something that I feel as a U.S. citizen, I want to own that right, and I want to be proud of that right. So that's just some feeling that I've had in the last couple of months. But what do you want to say in your final takeaway?
Yeah, so what you said about checking in with your husband about did you vote? So I'd like us all to reframe and think about who we are. Hi, I'm Lisa. I am a voter. It puts it in the active. Right. It's the action. I am a voter. And I just like to ask everybody to have that mindset going into any election and vote your values. Vote your values.
Dr. Lisa Campbell is the founder and CEO of Population Health Consultants. She's a leadership and life coach for nurses as her primary service. She's known as an enterprising public health nursing executive with over 40 years' experience. She's a respected and trusted coach and a really effective innovator. Thank you for joining us today to talk about why we vote and why you're committing a daily practice of helping people get out the vote.
You're welcome. Thanks, Barbara.